Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
My vision for the university is going to be rooted in four core priorities. First, we will continue to strengthen academic excellence and expand our research capacity. That means supporting our faculty, attracting top talent, and investing in innovation across every area of the institution. Security, healthcare, engineering. Second, we will grow our workforce-aligned programs and partnerships, ensuring that our students are prepared for success in the industry shaping Florida's future. Whether it's cybersecurity, healthcare, engineering, or education, UF will lead the way in preparing the next generation of professionals.
Oh. Not UF. UWF. This was, of course, Manny Diaz talking during a press conference. He did at 10 o'clock yesterday. I interviewed him yesterday at 8 o'clock. We'll replay that for you coming up in just about 20 minutes. But, you know, it was coming out day for him in the sense of coming out, meeting the media, answering questions, talking to people, giving his vision for the future for UWF. He made a couple of small mistakes that, you know, I don't think you hold any of this against him. The one right at the very end, that was one calling it UF by mistake instead of UWF, which he said many, many times during the speech. The one that was right at the end, he was talking about football. And he was asked, you know, just talking about the importance of football and the value of football and sports in general. Actually, very interesting, some of his comments about athletics. We'll get to that in a bit. But then he was kind of, you know, asked about the Argos and what they can do and what's important.
Last question. What's your best advice to this football team?
Win a national championship.
You mean win another national championship, though, right, sir?
I know that's what they want to do, so I'm not telling them anything that they, you know, I know how hard that is. You know, the only thing you can do is prepare as best you can. Know that you've left it all on the field. At the end of the day, sometimes the ball doesn't, you know, doesn't bounce your way, but as long as you can walk away and know that you put everything you have with the time you've had into it, then I think we're going to be happy with the results. Thank you. And thank you all. Appreciate you all. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think he knows that we won a national championship at UWF. But, okay. I mean, if you want to judge him as an outsider who's not from here, you know, you'll find evidence for that, and that's an example. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, he's new to the job, 3 days here. He doesn't know everything. I'm certain somebody in communications got with him right after and said, sir, we just want to let you know that they did, in fact, actually already win a national championship. But it's just, you know, again, I have my attitude on Manny Diaz, especially after talking to him. I talked to him off the air on Tuesday for a little while. I talked with him on the air. That conversation will, like I said, replay for you. It basically confirmed what I already believed, which is that I have high hopes. I'm optimistic. I still hate how we got here. Very much frustrated about how we got here and some of the things done by the governor with regards to the Board of Trustees. But we are here. And, you know, how much does the how we got here story matter compared to the where are we going now? And I'm actually pretty optimistic because I do think he's got not just, you know, I mean, for basically a brand new person, he's starting to get a pretty good grasp of where UWF is, and he's got, I think, some fairly interesting ideas about the places where UWF can get better. And he was emphatic yesterday about, you know, praising the accomplishments that have already been done, which there are many, except for the championship in football.
We will enhance our offerings for military students, building on our well-deserved reputation as a university that embraces and supports active duty service members, veterans, and military-affiliated families. I mean, I don't have to tell anybody here, within a three-hour drive, the number of military installations that we have that are so important to our country and that are so important to this community and this region as a whole. And so we have to make sure, and I know a lot of work has been done with that, but we have to make sure we can continue to leverage that and maximize that potential.
Yeah, and he was clear that, you know, he recognizes things are going well, but even when it's going well, that doesn't mean you can't do better, and that doesn't mean you can sort of just keep doing what you're doing, because somebody's always nipping at your heels. I mean, we're excited we're number three in the metrics tied with FSU, but you've got to believe that USF and UCF and FAMU are all looking at that and thinking, well, if UWF can do it, you know, maybe we can do it, right? They're wanting to get to that status too. And by the way, and also just a note about the metrics, we talked about this when they came out. UWF largely scored well on the metrics because of our objective accomplishments, as in where we are on the scale. But UWF also scored well in some of the metrics because of how we grew on the scale. The metrics are designed to reward objective greatness and also improvement. Well, you can only score high on the metrics so long as in improving. At some point, you don't get the improvement because you're higher and you have to actually keep doing it really, really well, and you have to score that way. So just, I mean, that's the thing to keep in mind. That's all. You know, the schools that are sort of at the top of the scoring are going to be there because of their objective greatness. UWF is at least in part on the higher level of the scoring because we have been improving. And, you know, the most improved university is, I mean, not as good as the already good university, right? I mean, when we say we're competing with FSU in the metrics, that's not the same as saying that all across the board, the objective metrics of where we are the same, because they're not. And it'd be kind of silly to say so, right? But we're doing great. I mean, I don't want to, you know, downplay that, but it is based in part on improvement.
Promote access, affordability, and strong student outcomes. Every student that walks on this campus should know that they belong. We're committed to helping them cross that graduation stage and thrive as they take what they've learned at UWF into the world.
Absolutely. And even partnership in terms of economic development.
And finally, we will deepen UWF's role in driving economic and community development throughout Northwest Florida. Our university is not just a place of learning. It's a driver of progress in our region, and a region that's already growing. And there's so much opportunity. I mean, I've been able to witness some of that just in a short time. And UWF really has to be at the center of that.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think he really does have a good grasp of, and this comes from being a senator, this comes from being Secretary of Education, or the Commissioner of Education, and he's had a lot of experience with Escambia County dealing with, like, for example, Escambia County School Board and schools that have been challenged, like Warrington, you know, for example. I remember he was at the center of all of the discussions about, you know, the foot dragging over, you know, Warrington Middle School and, you know, where we are now with Warrington Prep and just all of that. So it's not like he doesn't know anything about Escambia County, but also a grasp of the importance of the military, not just in terms of serving that community, honoring that community, but thinking of that community as a key feeder of basically the client base. You know, who uses UWF? Well, you know, military folks use UWF a lot. And one of the things that I think he brings to the table, at least what I have heard yesterday and thinking about some of these comments, is thinking about UWF sort of as a company. And that's not what he would say, but or at least he didn't say that. But if you look at it as a corporation or a company or a business, and then thinking about, you know, what is your product? How can we make the product better? But also, you know, what's our client base and how can we expand it? And it's in that context that he was very clear repeatedly that, you know, he doesn't want to just grant that the best students should be going to Florida or Florida State or Auburn or Alabama. But instead, you know, we need to start thinking about UWF as the place where the best students could go. And let's draw on that and let's expand our base of access. You know, the number of people who are going to be interested in a UWF instead of just being, you know, largely the, you know, local kids, that we need to start thinking about, you know, UWF as in the conversation nationally as a place where people want to bring their kids from kind of all over the place, including, you know, military all across the region.
We can always improve with our military. I know I think we're ranked, you know, we're obviously ranked in the top 10 as military friendly. Continue to foster those opportunities. I intend to meet with every base commander going all the way over to Tyndall on how we can better serve our military community. And obviously, you've seen the metrics, and it is difficult to improve from where we are now. But if the best defense is to play offense, and so you have to continue to look for ways on how do you continue to improve that. Fortunately, we have a provost that's very engaged in that, and it's a passion for him. So he's always looking at that. And at the end of the day, it can't just be a number, but how do the student experience, right? What are we doing for students? Because we can't get in the trap of just, okay, we have good metrics, so we're good. No, we have to continue to strive.
Yeah, and that's right. And that attitude of not taking the already pretty good success of UWF, and it has been pretty good, for granted, but thinking, you know, how can we do better? How can we build? How can we expand? And, I thought those comments were very much on point. 437-1620, 437-1620. I thought he also had very interesting comments about the athletics and the value of athletics. What he was asked was, you know, what separates us from, for example, Division I FBS, and kind of in the lingering background is, what about the possibility of becoming a D1? It wasn't directly asked that, but, you know, obviously having a very good football program and very good other athletic programs as well. And sort of the background conversation, is it better to be the big fish in the little pond of Division II, or is it better to be the little fish in the big pond of Division I? And, you know, how much money, how size of population, what kind of features do we have that do or do not meet the criteria for going into Division I? But that's kind of background stuff, okay? But he, I thought, had fairly interesting thoughts about the role of athletics in building the brand and the product of UWF.
Well, I can tell you that I have an athletics background, so I'm sure the athletic director and the coaches and student athletes are excited about that. I think you have to you have a gem. I think that's the way I would describe it. And you're being very competitive at the Division II level. We will look at all options with what's best for this institution. And this institution is unique. It's not like every other institution. You know, we don't have 47 or 50,000 students. And so we have to do things that are prudent. But at the same time, we have to put our athletic department in the best possible situation to be successful, and the student experience to be the right one.
And I like that answer, because it doesn't, I mean, he's right. The size of UWF is quite small compared to these big Division I schools. And, you know, recognizing that is an important way of realizing where we aren't, but also realizing what our, you know, our goal should be, which is not necessarily to triple our size so that we can become a Division I school, but, you know, what best serves this particular student body.
I believe in athletics because, number one, at the K-12 level, I think it's the biggest dropout prevention program we have in this country. It's been the most effective. Number two, builds character. It builds young men and women, right? So just aside from winning, it's a microcosm of life, right? You go through adversity. You go through hard work, blood, sweat, and tears. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. The important part is to learn from every experience. But at the end of the day, I think we also need to use that as our front door, right? I've seen many institutions that have done that effectively.
Yeah, athletics is a great advertisement. Athletics is a great kind of identity marker. And you can whine and kick and scream about that reality all you like, but it's true that athletics is one of the key features of growing, thriving, bigger, better universities.
What I would say to the academic folks and to the rest of the folks in the institution is, athletics is a branding apparatus as well as something that is for our students. So if we can win, if we can be out there, it raises people's awareness of UWF, and our intention is to make sure that we maximize that, because that will drive enrollment. That will pique students' attention. You know, maybe they weren't looking at UWF, but all of a sudden our football team, you know, no pressure, goes to a national championship. That's going to drive attention.
Again. But no, he's right. He's right. People who wouldn't otherwise pay attention to the university, they see your name and, you know, in you know, championships or winning a championship in any sport, and they pay more attention, and you draw more access, you know, from not just athletes, but from all sorts of students.
We've seen it, you know, as a member of BOG, I've seen it at FAU.
Board of Governors, by the way.
We've seen it, you know, as a member of BOG, I've seen it at FAU. FAU made a run to the Final Four a few years ago. Their enrollment went up. You know, I don't know what the percentage was, but it was crazy. When FGCU did it, which is a similar sized institution, that drove enrollment and attention. And so how do you maximize that, and how do you brand that? How do you make sure there's visibility for the institution? Because that also provides opportunities to draw down other investment. Because when people want to be part of something, it's human nature, right? And if you're winning, people are more willing to donate money to academic programs. They want to be part of what's going on this campus. And I think it's incredibly important for morale and for school spirit on the campus. You just have a better functioning culture when you have that.
Yeah, and understanding that, thinking about that. I mean, this goes back to Judy Bench seeing in advance the value of a football program. And, of course, Martha Saunders continued that. But, anyway, I hear a lot of things that I have reason to be optimistic about. But I'm not sold yet. I mean, we're starting with him. And, I see good signs. But time will tell. And as Lonzie Scott, one of the Board of Trustees, who's one of the pre-DeSantis trustees, said, several times in the last board meeting, pay attention. Judge us by the results. And, if in a couple of years the results aren't great, well, we'll know why. Or in a couple of years, if the results are still great, we'll know we did okay. I mean, both fair comments. 524 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, this is Dr. Ben McMillan. I do a show on the Pensacola Expert Panel. We talk about your health problems.
Let me educate you about the Activator method of adjusting, which offers a safe and effective alternative to traditional manual adjustments. So whether you've been hurt in a car accident or been suffering from back or neck pain, chiropractic care could be your solution and not just a temporary fix.
Join me tomorrow on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Why'd I go to the doctor? My heart would race just taking my son to practice. It didn't feel right. So I got checked out. Turns out I have atrial fibrillation, which increases the risk of stroke about 5 times.
Symptoms like irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, or lightheadedness can come and go. But if it's AFib, the risk of stroke remains. If you have symptoms, contact a doctor.
I'm so glad I did.
Visit notimetowait.com. Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
An official message from Medicare.
I turned 65 this year. I knew it was time to figure out Medicare, and I had questions, like when to enroll and how to enroll. So I went straight to the official source, Medicare.gov, to get the facts about Medicare. I found answers to all my questions, and I'm ready to get started. And so can you. Just go to Medicare.gov to get the real facts about Medicare.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Like what you hear?
Give us your feedback by filling out our News Radio Listener Advisory Board survey. Just go to our website, newsradio923.com, and fill it out.
Simple.
News Radio 92.3.
You're not the devil. You're practice.
Good morning, 526, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. So this storm-ish, what had been a blob, what is currently demonstrating most of its concerns south of Mississippi and all around New Orleans. I don't know what to expect from this thing. What I do know is that Channel 3 last night, when you were watching their progression of rainfall, at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, they had it at under an inch. And at 10 o'clock tomorrow night, they had it at 3 to 5 inches, depending on where you lived in the area. And I thought, good Lord, what's going to happen tomorrow night at 8 o'clock? And I would say at this point, we do not know. But there's a reason that Santa Rosa County and Escambia County are both offering sand at, bunches of locations. And it's not necessarily because we're going to get, tropical storm, but it might be because if you get enough of the wrong kind of rainfall in the wrong kind of places and rivers and flow, you can have problems. So, just kind of be aware. I'm not taking this as an imminent threat kind of situation, but, if flood water is more prone to affect you, now is the time to think about, A, what do you do, and B, are you safe? David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. President Trump says the media and some Republicans are either pushing or falling for what he's calling the Epstein hoax. Trump spoke to reporters yesterday in the Oval Office. He was asked about the contentious investigation. He said he's surprised that he believes Republicans have been duped.
This is one of the most fascinating stories because I've told you, I said yes, I have not really cared a lot about the Epstein story all along. And so for me, for Bondi to not release whatever or for them to deny their existence or whatever, it's all to me not that important. But I've been surprised to discover, because I have thought many times, oh, this is the time where Trump's base goes against him. When he attacks DeSantis for being too pro-life, I thought, oh, that's it. He's done. Nope. People didn't care. Yeah. This is weird. This one seems to be the
we're
one.
We're there now. Yeah,
yeah, this absolutely seems to be, because, built on conspiracy theories, built on weird theories about all kinds of things, from the deep state to so many. He has embraced them over the years. And this one all of a sudden seems to be the one where his core, like, super sold out supporters are now like, you said what?
Well, it's difficult to campaign on something and get elected on, I'm going to release all this information. It's going to put people in jail.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, well, it never existed.
Right.
What? What do you mean?
And it's not, I mean, it's everybody from, you know, the super, you know, MAGA folks to, you know, the Speaker of the House to the leader of the Democrats. Kind of like everybody's got the same approach. Like, what are you doing? He got ratioed on this. You know this term ratioed in social media? Ratioed is when you get more either negative responses than you get positive, or you get more like comments rather than shares, likes. It's like the only ratioed post he's had in a month, and it was on this one exactly. People are angry about being, you know, told that this is all BS. His words. I use the acronym. He used the word. So anyway, go ahead. It's a fascinating story.
Absolutely. Well, a lightning strike apparently hit a New Jersey archery range, killed an instructor and injured more than a dozen people, including 8 children. The youngest victim, only 7 years old. That happened last night while a Boy Scout troop was at the range. It's unclear if any of the people that were injured were scouts. And police investigating a high-dollar burglary at the home of Arizona Diamondbacks star Ketel Marte, who was in Atlanta for the All-Star game when the break-in happened. Scottsdale police say jewelry and personal items were taken Tuesday night. Apparently nobody was home at the time.
I don't know when this became a thing, but it's a thing now for these high-profile athletes and, you know, movie stars and whatever. All right, David, thank you so much for the update. Let's see. Wine a little, dine a lot, a charity wine pairing gala for Cat Country 98.7 and Capstone Adaptive Learning and Therapy Center. Get your tickets now.
News. I'm Gianna Gelosi. The Senate approving a White House request to claw back $9 billion in already approved funding for foreign aid and public broadcasting.
On this vote, the yeas are 51, the nays are 48, and on this vote, the bill is amended as passed.
Republican Senator Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski voted against the bill, arguing their party was ceding Congress's power of the purse. The bill now goes to the House. President Trump says if you believe what he calls the Epstein hoax, you're a weakling.
I lost a lot of faith in certain people. Yeah, they got duped by the Democrats.
Yesterday, his administration fired Maureen Comey from the DOJ. She prosecuted Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and most recently worked on the Diddy case. Her exit comes as her father, former FBI Director James Comey, faces a criminal investigation tied to the Trump-Russia probe. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got cloudy skies. It is 80 degrees in Pensacola. A man's been arrested for a fatal shooting on Wilson Avenue and Kincaid Street. 58-year-old Michael Stephen Johnson. He was arrested last night after deputies responded to a home where a trespassing incident had apparently escalated into a shooting. Investigators say the victim had left the property but then later returned, and that's when the victim and Johnson got into an argument, and that escalated then into the fatal shooting. Johnson is currently being held on possession of a weapon by a convicted felon charges. He remains in the Escambia jail without bond. Former Pensacola Police Chief Eric Randall is breaking his silence after his sudden departure from the police department last week. He sat down with Channel 3 and Sue Strawn yesterday to address just what happened.
Mutually, it was agreed upon. The mayor wanted to go a different direction, and we mutually agreed to separate the relationship.
And Randall discussed reports of the department losing confidence in his leadership, some of the challenges he faced coming in as an outside hire for the department, and also he took time to thank the officers, 911 dispatchers, and especially the community. Channel 3 has posted that interview online in its entirety, if you'd like to see it. Now, those being held in the Alligator Alcatraz facility are suing. They say they want more access to their lawyers. The ACLU filed a class action lawsuit yesterday against the Department of Homeland Security, ICE, and the governor. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of 4 detainees at the Everglades Detention Center, the Alligator Alcatraz facility. The plaintiffs claim that their constitutional rights are being violated because they're being denied access to legal counsel. Ella Mann's life will be decided by a jury in Pinellas County. Shelby John Neely's death penalty trial began yesterday. He faces the death penalty for killing his ex-in-laws and their son in their home in Tarpon Springs 6 years ago. Neely was married to Richard and Laura Ivanchi's daughter, Jamie, who was also killed a year earlier. Prosecutors believe that Neely killed Richard, Laura, and their 25-year-old son because they were starting to suspect that he had killed Jamie. Neely wound up pleading guilty to killing Jamie. He was given a 30-year sentence in that case. It's 534 News Radio, 92.3. Right now, 80 degrees. We've got cloudy skies. And our next news is at 6 a.m. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The Financial Times reports the European Commission has stalled one of its investigations into Elon Musk's social media platform X for breaching its digital transparency rules while it seeks to conclude trade talks with the U.S. TSMC, the world's largest contract chipmaker, has posted a more than 60% jump in second quarter net profit, beating market forecasts and hitting a historic high as it benefited from surging demand for semiconductors used in artificial intelligence applications. Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company saw April to June net profit rise to just over $13.5 billion. OpenAI said it expects to use Google's cloud infrastructure for its popular ChatGPT artificial intelligence assistant. The reach for additional capacity aligns with OpenAI's desire for more computing power to meet heavy demand after initially relying exclusively on Microsoft for cloud capacity. OpenAI will use the Google Cloud platform as well as Microsoft, CoreWeave, and Oracle. Futures are mixed. That's your money now.
During the month of July, score incredible savings on American-made flooring at Jonathan's Flooring. Like 5mm vinyl plank flooring in a variety of colors with pads, normally $2.99, now only $2.49 a square foot. Or 6.5mm vinyl plank flooring in a variety of colors with pads, normally $3.99, now $3.29 a square foot. The Made in America sales event happening throughout the month of July at Jonathan's Flooring, 9320 North Palafox, and online at jonathansflooring.com.
Hey, hey, Pensacola pet parents. Got questions about your fur babies? Well, I'm Dr. Mark Sprayberry, owner of Olive Branch Pet Hospital and Play and Stay Boarding and Daycare here in Pensacola. I'd like to invite you to tune in to my new show, Sit, Stay, and Listen, where I'll be answering all your pet questions live on air. Tune in today at 9. See all you cool people then.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-1620.
When a storm is brewing, you need reliable information at your fingertips. Tune in to News Radio 92.3 for comprehensive hurricane coverage you can count on. Our team of anchors and reporters are in studio and at the County Emergency Operations Centers, bringing you live updates, safety tips, and emergency resources. From storm tracking to storm information, we've got you covered. Stay informed, stay safe. When the winds pick up, we're right there with you. News Radio 92.3, your trusted source during hurricane season.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
I always think that you learn a lot about people from the weird things. And one of the weird things is I like to ask people when they're going to come on the show what music they want for walk-up music. And, you know, Jimmy Petronas likes country and, you know, other people like their stuff. Wes Moreno likes, you know, classic rock, same for Brad Baker. And when I asked Manny Diaz, what do you want to play? And he's like, Journey. I'm like, okay. He says, Don't Stop Believing. I thought, done. We can do that. Joining us now, we have the interim president at the University of West Florida, former senator, former commissioner of education, secretary of education, whatever, the head of education in Florida, Manny Diaz. Welcome back, or welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
morning, and thanks for having me on, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We're having, all of a sudden, we didn't have this when you and I talked a second ago, but we are having a phone issue. It's super choppy, like digitized. Can you talk just another second, and let's we'll try to fix this if we can't fix it. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, can you hear me?
Ah, perfect. Thank you. I'm so worried. All right. So let's start with the hard stuff, okay? You know, I don't know how much you've – I assume nothing, okay? I've taken a very kind of critical position of Governor DeSantis on his appointments to the Board of Trustees, the various moves by them, the what I consider to be the ousting of Martha Saunders, somebody who everybody loves and even the board has, you know, very vehemently endorsed and praised and all of this. So many things have happened with UWF that have frustrated and really angered a lot of locals, myself included, as a UWF dad, two kids who either have or are going there. And so I wanted to give you a chance to kind of address that, including even, you know, like why wasn't Martha Saunders allowed the chance to be interim and then you could be brought in during a regular search later on if you were going to be the winner of this process. So the community, many of the community is very frustrated about all this, and this is a chance for you to kind of address those concerns to them.
Well, Andrew, thanks for that. And look, I can't speak directly for the board or each individual board member, obviously. And I think change is difficult. I think there had, you know, overall, for the longest time, this board at UWF, from what I had seen as a member of the BOG overseeing the state university system, is it had been kind of around for a long time. And there is change. Change is difficult. I can't speak to the direction as whether, you know, President Saunders wanted to stay on as an interim, and because that's a decision that ultimately she made. But I do know that the board is trying to do what's best in the best interest of the school. Now, having said that, I think President Saunders did a great job. I think you can see the metrics of the school doing very well in the top three this year under the BOG. I think there's a lot of things that have been built, and there's a positive. And I can see, I think, from the board's perspective, and now from my clear perspective, kind of coming in and trying, you know, even learning more, seeing it up front, that this institution has a lot of potential. And, you know, you the ability to build on the things that have already been positive and have been building over the last two or three presidents at this institution. So I think there's people who know the institution know that it's grown, it's changed. Anytime you have change and new board members and those kind of things, it is unsettling. It can be upsetting, and I understand that fully. I know how important this institution is to this community, but I also know that this institution not only, you know, can play a role regionally as a powerhouse economically and for this community, as well as having some programs that are nationally renowned. Cybersecurity is one of them. So I think that there was a view, of folks across the state, maybe in the Board of Governors, maybe in the governor's office, of more potential. And, you know, the appointment of the board when it came open, I mean, it was just I understand that there was some concerns about who got appointed, but it was the process that was followed is the process in the law. And so I can't speak for how those decisions were made of the who to point, but I can tell you where we are now, and I think it's an opportunity to move forward and to provide this community assurance that the goal here is to improve the institution, to grow, and especially to make the student experience better. At the end of the day, it needs to be student-focused. At the end of the day, that is our product, right? That's our mission, and as you do that, providing opportunities for industry here in Pensacola and in Northwest Florida. There's a lot of growth going on. There's a lot of potential, and UWF really needs to be involved in all of that because we can be a catalyst to help that growth in this community.
We're talking to Manny Diaz. He is the interim president at UWF. Manny, it's kind of a different approach to kind of these concerns with the community, and this will lead us into talking about the future. But there's a lot of people that looked at the way the Board of Trustees were appointed, the way they were appointed over objections, some very controversial picks, and so forth from the governor, and a feeling that they really came in and bullied the rest of the board. And really, it felt like a hostile takeover. I mean, it felt like why is the governor attacking us? We're one of the premier thriving growing institutions in the state. We're killing all the metrics. We're now tied with FSU and the metrics. You know, why were we singled out for this big change? And their fear, I think their fear is that we've got this good thing and it's going to, you know, it's going to be ruined, or it's going to be taken in a hyper-conservative direction. It's going to swing the other way or something like that. And I know you and I had a chance to talk a little bit yesterday as well, and so I know you've addressed some of that. But I wanted, again, this is a concern and a future question, but I wanted to give you a chance to address that.
Yeah, and I think, look, I think, Andrew, what happens is I get that. I get the feeling. I understand how people would feel that way. The situation was there happened to be a lot of openings on this board. So when you appoint a larger number of people, it feels like a takeover. But had there been two or three openings, it would have been through two or three appointments. So I do think that whole move gives that sensation, right, or that feeling. And I know that there was some choppy pieces of that with some, you know, maybe especially one of the initial appointments that caused a stir. That situation kind of took care of itself and is behind us now. And I think if you look at the individual board members, there are my conversations with them, all of their interest is the improvement of the institution and this community, right? How does it fit into community? But also at the end of the day, we have to understand that UWF is also a state asset and there's a lot of potential. So I do think, you know, from the state government perspective, the governor, the legislature, UWF is a state asset, is something that produces not only for this region, but also for the state. And I think going forward, the metrics are great, but I think every time that you look at an institution and you look at on an asset, we have to look at continuous improvement, right? And so everybody has a role to bring the institution to a certain point. If, like you said, the metrics are great, top three, there's great programming. Obviously, football was added a few years ago, and that has been a tremendous success, and we look forward to continuing that. But I think what we need to look at going forward is where are the opportunities to build on what was already put in there. So this is not about breaking down the institution or blowing up the institution. I think that was a fear that some folks had early on.
Yeah.
This is about how do we build upon some of these assets and some of these programs that are already doing well and can really be a catalyst for the institution. Some obvious ones, right? And we talk about cybersecurity. I think it's an elite cybersecurity program. I think it's situated geographically in a place where you couldn't be anywhere better, right? But how do we continue to maximize that on federal funding, on being involved with the DOD or DHS, and really building that as a program that is national? When cybersecurity is mentioned in the United States, UWF should be mentioned in that same sentence. That's my view on it. And so how do we continue to build that? Part of it is branding, right? Part of it is getting out there and letting people see what's going on at this gem of an institution, right? The military presence here in Northwest Florida, obviously I don't have to explain that to anybody. Everybody's aware. How do we continue to build on the ability to provide opportunities for our soldiers and sailors and airmen, and how do we expand those opportunities to keep those individuals here after they finish their service and becoming part of our economy here in Northwest Florida? And so that's another opportunity. But again, how do we partner with the DOD to build programs and research? You know, the IHMC. How do you build on that partnership? That's a tremendous another gem here in Northwest Florida. So there's so many opportunities here at UWF. I think the message is it's not about blowing it up. It's how do we take these things and now continue to grow them to the next level. Enrollment, I'm happy to report, as of our latest report here this month, continues to increase. I'm not ready to cede any ground, and I told you this yesterday, from here all the way to Panama City, we shouldn't be losing students to Auburn or Troy or any of those schools. We should be fighting to become the number one choice for those students, not a secondary choice. And so how do you do that? You continue to speak to students, you continue to get the word out and really highlight those things that are doing well and continue to improve on the things. How do you attract not only top-notch students, but also top-notch faculty? How do you continue to expand in undergraduate research, which is something kind of unique that UWF does?
Yeah.
And, you know, clearly our athletic department is at the heartbeat of this community. And we're, you know, no pressure on the football coach, but obviously this community has had right. some high expectations for that. Yeah.
You know, it's very interesting to think of UWF that way. And by the way, I actually appreciate the comparison or the observation that we tend to think of UWF as belonging to all of us here in Pensacola, but it really is a state-owned property, much like we tend to think of the Navy base as belonging to us, but it really is a Navy training facility. And so that's actually kind of an interesting reminder. I kind of like that vision of us competing with Auburn or Troy or anywhere else. We're probably only going to have time for one more quick one because I only got about 2 or 3 minutes left. But I did want to – I think this is a question a lot of people will have. Talk to me a little bit about academic freedom. And what is your goal? What is your – how will we know we've hit the right note in terms of conflict of ideas, discussion of ideas, openness, and that kind of stuff on campus? Because that's definitely a concern that people have.
Well, number one, you're going to see on the agenda for the next two board meetings, you're going to see a neutrality statement. And that is a statement that for those folks who are not familiar, you know, like the Chicago statement, is that the institution itself is neutral. In other words, what does that mean? It means that the institution itself is not to impose any point of view, right or left or middle or whatever it is, on any student. But we should be providing opportunities. And I'm a fan. We talked about this yesterday. I'm a fan of having students have not only the opportunities to listen to different point of views individually, but also let's get some debate going. Let's bring folks that have opposite views onto this campus. Let's have them civilly debate. That's something that I really want to implement in an arena where we can have civil debate with thought leaders from different points of views. Let them have that debate and discussion and allow students to either participate, be there, but let students arrive at their own decisions. Let them, you know, think critically. Let them take those debates back and think about them. So when we talk about neutrality, is the institution itself is not going to impede or impose any views and shouldn't be involved in any of that. There's academic freedom for the professors. Students and student groups should have First Amendment rights. So they're going to, you know, it is my job to make sure that they have the ability to, as long as it doesn't cross over into hate, you know, or those kind of things that we've seen, and we don't need to kind of clarify that. We know what that is. But I think having those points of view, being able to discuss, but hey, let's spark discussion. Let's just not talk about, hey, you have the ability to have, you know, diverse viewpoints here. And let's talk about starting those conversations and those debates with some figures that will draw interest from students and create a spark on the campus. And I think that's what, when we're talking about, and you know this from your experience, that when we're talking about higher ed, that's what we need to see more about. So the institution should not be pushing anything right or left or middle, like I said, but we should be providing those opportunities in a balanced way and create that spark.
You know, one of the things that I have said continuously about you coming on, or talking to Manny Diaz, the interim president at UWF, is I've known, you know, of Manny from a distance, watching him in the legislature. He seems like a very capable person. However we got here, and I've had very, very strong reservations and criticisms of how we got here, I'm optimistic for the future. And in talking with you a bit yesterday and in talking with you today, I have that same optimism still. You know, I do believe you have the best interests of UWF and the community at the heart. And I'm, you know, eager to get to know you a little bit better. I hope your family adapts to the sort of temporary living circumstances. And I also hope that we're able to resolve the Hawk situation in the pool, which I know you're on top of. So it's always a variety of problems, right?
Not what I was expecting on week one. The Hawk situation is a little unique. The Hawk flying through the glass in the aquatic center and you know, and perching in a place where we can't get to it. And it's been a couple of days. And so, That wasn't on my bingo card for presidency first week.
No, I can imagine not. But hey, that is the job, and welcome to it. Well, we'll look forward to more at the press conference today, and what I assume will be other conversations you and I will have in the future. President Manny Diaz,
absolutely.
Welcome to Pensacola. So nice to get to meet you. Thank you for taking on the opportunity of talking with me this morning, and for taking on the task of running our very, very dearly beloved university. I appreciate it. Best of luck to you, sir.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrew. I look forward to those continued conversations.
Yeah, most definitely. And most likely we'll be having Manny Diaz on. Maybe we're working on a schedule, but maybe once a month, something like that, which I think is good. It's good for the university to get their message out. It's good for the community, you guys, to be able to hear from your new president, you know, as he's interim, and what we all expect he will wind up being the full-time president when they go through that selection process. Of course, you know, nothing's guaranteed in advance. I'm just saying what everybody kind of assumes. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are looking for that next vehicle, Frontier Motors has an outstanding selection of good quality, almost new cars. Cars that are a year to 3 or 4 years young. You know, a lot of times when you go to a used car place, you kind of expect that it's the full range of, you know, cars that are 3 or 4 years old and cars that are maybe 15 or 18 years old, you know, and they're kind of like barely hanging on for dear life and, you know, the clunker end of the junker. They don't really deal in that kind of car. They really only deal in cars that are very good quality, cars that you can count on, cars that are what they call A condition, you know, like ABCD, A condition, because they're going to warranty them to 10 years or 100,000 miles. And, you know, they want you to have that confidence when you buy from them that, you know, you're not going to have to buy again anytime real soon, unless you want to. But, you know, most of the time you don't want to. So, you know, that idea of, you know, well, we're going to pull one over on you and get you in the car that you're going to find out is kind of a lemon after that. That's just not what they do. That's why they've been around for so long, is because it's really a kind of a specialized sort of used car dealer. Like I said, you know, those cars only that are in great condition, you just don't have to pay for that initial depreciation hit of driving it off the lot. That's why, you know, Dave Ramsey likes them. That's why I like them. That's why, you know, thousands of you buy from them and have bought from them and drive around with the bumper stickers and the license plate frame saying how much you love them. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 92% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Registration for the fall semester is now open. Classes begin August 18th. Go to PensacolaState.edu. That's PensacolaState.edu. Go here, get there.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services, advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
News Radio 92.3 is proud to be a partner in the success of a lot of local businesses. We want your business to be part of this success story in 2025 with our unique platform to showcase your powerful message. Every day, News Radio's Pensacola Expert Panel provides an opportunity unlike any other. Hi, I'm Meg, host of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Let us help you share your message. Contact us to get you and your business part of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Call 850-262-6000.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
And remember, the Lord loves a working man.
Lord loves a working man.
And son, don't never ever trust Whitey.
Don't trust Whitey. Lord loves a working man, don't trust Whitey.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed.
She was looking. I mean, that's the same advice I follow all the time. Lord loves a working man, don't trust Whitey. 437-1620. Oh my God, The Jerk is such a good movie. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David.
All I need are these few items, this paddle game and this ashtray.
That's right.
I haven't seen that movie in so long. I love it. I'm not killing time until I get the right screen up either. That's not what's happening at all.
I feel like if we had a radio version of somebody doing like a 5 second shuffle, you know, right? You're tap dancing. Go on.
So Senate Republicans are voting to slash funding for public broadcasting, global health and foreign aid as part of a $9 billion rollback in previously approved spending. The package passed early this morning and includes cuts to NPR, PBS, the World Health Organizations, and USAID.
Who?
Is it USAID or USAID? How do you
USAID.
Okay.
But I said, I mean, I said, who? And because the World Health.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I seem to have gotten the comedy stuck in my throat. Go on, David, go on. I was inspired by Steve Martin and apparently did not follow suit.
Well, it was a valiant effort.
Yeah.
So it's all tied to the Department of Government Efficiency, and it's now heading to the House before potentially making it to President Trump's desk for final approval. The National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline for LGBTQ youth shuts down today as federal spending cuts continue. Mental health groups are preparing for that impact. And police investigating that burglary at the home of Arizona Diamondback star Ketel Marte. He was in Atlanta for the All-Star game. Apparently somebody broke in and stole jewelry and other personal items.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Yeah, the shutting down of the basically the alternate sexuality suicide hotline, I can't understand this decision. The entire world knows, all of social work knows, that LGBT folks have a much higher rate of depression, much higher rate of suicide. It is a mentally troubled community by statistic. There's nothing newsy about that. And so if you have a suicide hotline specifically devoted to helping those people, it's going to have effect. It's going to benefit them. It's going to save their lives. And to shut that down specifically doesn't make any sense to me. Regardless of what you feel ethically, morally, politically about that group, saving people's lives is saving people's lives. And this decision, like I said, I can't find a justification for it.
Local Talk in the Morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3 WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
Targeted as wasteful spending by Doge. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. Federal funding Senate Republicans want to cancel.
On this vote, the bill is amended as passed.
And that final vote was after 2 o'clock this morning.
This shouldn't be a hard one. It's $9 billion. It's 0.1% of all federal spending. And it's a chance for us to claw back some of the waste, fraud, and abuse in a lot of these programs.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune. Most of that money was supposed to be foreign aid. There's also funding cut to public broadcasting, as Republicans say PBS and NPR have a liberal bias. There were two GOP no votes. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins concerned the broadcasting funding cuts hurt rural areas. All Democrats voted no. Senator Dick Durbin says the bill tarnishes America's image as a global leader. Now in the House, three cryptocurrency regulation bills cleared procedural hurdles after some Republicans spent days trying to make changes and keep the Fed out of crypto. GOP Congressman Andrew Clyde tells Fox Business.
The pushback was about ensuring that we had the best opportunity possible to ban central bank digital currency because, you know, that sets up the surveillance state. We're not like China.
A federal prosecutor is out of a job.
Maureen Comey was fired from her job in the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York. She is the daughter of former FBI Director James Comey, who President Trump fired during his first term after Comey initiated the Russia investigation. Maureen Comey recently helped prosecute Sean Diddy Combs, who was convicted of a prostitution-related charge but acquitted of more serious charges. She was also involved in the criminal case against sex offender Jeffrey Epstein.
That's Fox's Kristen Goodwin. Now, President Trump's calling a simmering controversy about Epstein a hoax. Conservatives demanding more information are being conned by Democrats, and he doesn't want their support anymore as they challenge a Justice Department conclusion Epstein did kill himself in jail awaiting charges on sex trafficking crimes. They also believe Epstein had a client list. America's listening to Fox News.
Millions of Americans take medicine like Ozempic and Zepbound. Many of them are overpaying by thousands of dollars a year. These GLP-1 medications for diabetes, weight loss, and more may not always be covered by your insurance, but GoodRx can help. GoodRx helps you save every month on prescriptions at over 70,000 pharmacies nationwide. Best of all, it's free to use. Check GoodRx to save on GLP-1s. Just go to GoodRx.com/GLP. That's GoodRx.com/GLP. GoodRx is not insurance, but can be used instead of insurance, including Medicare and other federal and state-funded programs.
Sometimes an identity threat is a ring of professional hackers. And sometimes it's an overworked accountant who forgot to encrypt their connection while sending bank details.
I need a coffee.
And you need LifeLock, because your info is in endless places. It only takes one mistake to expose you to identity theft. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second. If your identity is stolen, we'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code NEWS at LifeLock.com. Terms apply.
Protesters plan to gather across America today, speaking out again against President Trump's illegal immigration raids. They'll be in courthouses and more than 1,000 other locations. Now, the illegal immigrant controversially deported in March with other alleged gang members, then brought back from El Salvador by court order, is still in jail in Tennessee. But Kilmar Abrego Garcia is still trying to be set free, awaiting trial on human trafficking charges.
District Judge Waverly Crenshaw was on the bench hearing from a government witness, Homeland Security investigator Peter Joseph, who discussed a traffic stop in 2022 during which Abrego Garcia was suspected of human smuggling. In cross-examination, Joseph said he had not looked into the defendant's prior interactions with agents, and the defense said that ruins Joseph's credibility as a witness. They maintain their client will not flee before any trial. A decision on release could come as early as next week. Grinnell Scott, Fox News.
Now, the Trump administration's Make America Healthy Again push has led to food companies planning to remove artificial dyes, and now this.
Coca-Cola will use real cane sugar in its soda, President Trump says, announcing the agreement in a social media post. The president says it will be a very good move for the company, adding it's just better. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has pushed for food and beverage companies to be more transparent about ingredients and alter recipes to eliminate dyes and additives. Coca-Cola, sold in the U.S., generally uses corn syrup as a sweetener. Cane sugar is used in some foreign markets. At the White House, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
On Wall Street, stock futures are mixed the day after gains for the Dow and the Nasdaq, which closed at a record high. Connie Francis has died. It was one of her big hits when Francis made history as the first woman with three number one songs on the Billboard chart in 1960. She was 87. I'm Dave Anthony. This is Fox News.
Good morning, 6:05 at News Radio 92.3. It's cloudy right now. We've got 80 degrees in Pensacola this morning. Starting out, let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with PJ.
So this traffic report is brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Call us today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. Taking a look at the big board, there's a vehicle crash, I-10 westbound, right at mile marker 10. That's right near Pensacola Boulevard. They're saying the roadway is open there. Also taking a look at a vehicle crash on I-10 or I-110 northbound. That's at mile marker 5. They're saying the inside lane is blocked. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, PJ. A man's been arrested for a fatal shooting following a fatal shooting, on Wilson Avenue and Kincaid Street. 58-year-old Michael Stephen Johnson. He was arrested last night after deputies responded to a home where a trespassing incident had apparently escalated into a shooting. Investigators say the victim had left the property, then later returned. That's when the victim and Johnson reportedly got into an argument that escalated into the shooting. Johnson is currently being held on a possession of a weapon by a convicted felon charge and remains in the Escambia jail with no bond. Pensacola's former police chief Eric Randall spoke for the first time since his controversial departure last week. He sat down with Channel 3 and talked about the challenges he faced over the last few years, what led to the mutual decision for him to part ways with the police department, and also